Welcome to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Today, what will Hurricane Sandy mean for us here at home in Michigan? We're going to talk with a meteorologist about the storm's effects on the weather in the Midwest. And we continue our look at the ballot proposals you'll face in the voting booth next Tuesday. Today, it's an in-depth look at the referendum on the state's controversial emergency manager law. But first, think back, if you will, to another election in Michigan with a big, big question for voters. Will you approve term limits for Michigan's top elected officials, state House, Senate, and statewide office holders, including the governor? That election was in 1992, and 60% of Michigan voters said, yes, clear out the career politicians. So term limits became a reality in our state 20 years ago. But did that reform work as promised? Or have we swapped the situation of the old boys club career politicians for yet another? And that's lawmakers who jump into cushy new lives as lobbyists and consultants as soon as they hit the term limit? Paul Egan is with the Detroit Free Press Lansing Bureau. He joins us now along with Michigan Radio's political analyst, Jack Lessenberry. Welcome to you both.
Paul, hi, Cindy.
Hi. You had a huge cover story, Paul, in Sunday's Free Press tackling this question. So set the stage for us. How did the folks pushing for term limits sell this to voters?
Well, one of the main ways they sold it was on this idea of the citizen lawmaker, an idea that goes back to Thomas Jefferson. And, you know, in those days, the way they described it was somebody would leave their farm, you know, usually or a small business for a few years, come to the center of government, and then go back where they came from. And basically, one of the main things that we set out to do was to test that, you know, regardless of whether that's a desirable ideal or not, we wanted to test whether that ideal has been realized, and we found that it has not.
Well, there's something else that happened that you may not be aware of. As that appeared on the ballot, it also applied to congressmen. There were a lot of white suburbanites who voted for that because they thought they could get rid of people like John Conyers. The courts, however, as could have been predicted, immediately struck that down. They said a state can't limit federal office holders, but they left it in place as applies to people in the state of Michigan.
And, Jack, what else was the mood of the electorate like in 92? Was there a need to fix some problems on the state level?
Well, there's a perception of that. You may remember that was the great year of Ross Perot, when 20% of Michiganders voted for Ross Perot for president, and there was a general sort of feeling of revolt and a plague on both their houses, etc. And the trouble is, as Paul's excellent story demonstrated, it didn't work out quite as advertised.
That's right. So 20 years down the pike, how would you grade the effectiveness of creating citizen lawmakers?
Well, you certainly couldn't give it a passing grade on that. I mean, I think if you graded term limits solely on that basis, you would have to give it a D. Just on the issue that certainly it was intended for members of Congress as well, and actually if you look at the debate at the time, it really centered largely around Congress almost more than the state of Michigan. And a lot of people pointed to John Dingell, this idea of the dynasty of a congressman, and you know, his father had been the congressman. There was the idea that if John Dingell ever retired, that Chris Dingell would take over, and that was another basis that it was sold on. Let's get rid of these family dynasties. But in fact, what we found at the state level is that term limits have actually encouraged many dynasties, because someone with the same last name has a distinct advantage in an open seat, and term limits, one thing it does do is creates more open seats. So we found 12 or 13 examples just since term limits kicked in of spouses taking over from their spouse, or sons and daughters, brothers. You know, that's been another interesting development.
And I guess if you have lawmakers who are not seasoned and have not been there long enough to really get the ropes, who's there to offer that friendly guiding hand?
Well, a number of lawmakers told me that they are forced to rely on lobbyists. One of the interesting things is how many Republican lawmakers who actually say they voted in favor of term limits in 1992, in the course of reporting on this story, told me that they would take their vote back if they could, because what they feel they've really done is a move that was supposed to empower the electorate has actually, in their view, diminished the voters' control over what happens, because they have basically mandated inexperience in the legislative branch, which has shifted power to both the executive branch of government and to lobbyists on the outside.
So because we've got the lobbyists there with kind of the friendly guiding hand for green lawmakers, does that also mean we're seeing an increase in manufactured legislation where lobbyists are offering even verbiage that's being passed into bills?
Oh, I'm sure that's the case, and of course they have much more influence. There's another great pernicious quality about all this. In the old days, in the late 70s or early 80s when I covered the legislature, there were about 10 people on each side that had been there 30 years. They knew that was their career. They weren't going to Congress. They weren't going to be governor. And they had a certain loyalty above party to the state of Michigan. So after a certain amount of silliness, everyone would sit down in a smoke-filled room, and they'd find a way of getting things done. That doesn't happen much anymore, and we saw that in the late years of Granholm's second term when you had a couple brief state shutdowns and people going to the wall every year over budget matters.
In fact, that is a sense I think that the voters have, is all they do is fight. You hear that so often. So in a sense, it sounds like this has really contributed to that problem, that gridlock.
It may have. You know, the one caveat you have to include there is that we've seen a huge amount of hyper-partisanship and partisan gridlock in Congress during the same time period. And, of course, there are no term limits in Congress. So I think it's more difficult to link the high level of partisanship directly to term limits.
Well, Paul is absolutely right. It's kind of like Hurricane Sandy merging with the winter storms. You've got the effects of term limits plus this hyper-partisanship. A few years ago, I was part of sort of a clandestine, off-the-record group that put together secret dinners where legislators of each party were supposed to come together and talk to each other, because even talking to each other, socializing with each other, was frowned upon by the legislative leadership. I mean, this was just unheard of in the 60s and 70s and 80s. These people, they had sometimes bitter partisan defeats, but they palled around together and legislation got done. It's not like that anymore.
What do both of you think voters should take away from what we're talking about, what Paul's big story in the Free Press Sunday is all about? What should we as voters take away?
Well, one thing that we haven't touched on in this discussion that we highlighted considerably in this package of articles is the revolving door issue in Michigan. And we found a number of instances where committee chairmen, as their terms expired, walked directly into lobbying jobs with industries that were part of their committee responsibilities. And in no case can we say there was a direct quid pro quo, but because of the volume of these instances, it certainly raises concerns about what's happening here. And, you know, there has been, many states have revolving door legislation. There was a bill that passed the House but not the Senate in the Michigan legislature that would require a two-year cooling off period before a lawmaker could register as a lobbyist. And that's something that might be one takeaway that voters may want to consider if they think that this is an issue that is something they're concerned about.
And speaking of that law, in your piece, Paul, you point out that the Democrat from Dundee who held the post that chaired that committee, what happened when she hit her term limits?
Right. That was Kathy Angerer. She was a sponsor of that bill, actually, that would require the two-year cooling off period. She was also, while she was the House Majority Leader, was wined and dined, if you can say that, by AT&T to a significant extent. They spent more on her for food and beverages than just only one other lawmaker they spent more on during that period. And immediately when her term expired, in fact, AT&T announced a hiring in December. The lame duck season was over, but it wasn't yet the end of the year. That she was hired as a top lobbyist for AT&T. And again, you know, we can't say that there was anything nefarious happened there with any certainty. And Kathy Angerer says, and both she and AT&T say, that, you know, no job was ever discussed until the lame duck business was concluded.
Paul is being way too kind.
Yeah, Paul's being kind.
That's the most valuable part of the story. If it walks like a duck, if it quacks, what everybody knows is that if you're going to need a job, because Michigan's term limits are lifetime term limits. They're not like a sensible term limits like Ohio, where after two terms you have to sit out a term and you can come back. No, they're lifetime term limits, and the average state legislator, I guess, is somewhere around 44 years old. They've got a spouse, they've got kids going to college, and they know that they're going to need another job, and they know that if they're especially rough on utilities, utilities are unlikely to offer them a lobbying job. So, and yes, nothing is ever said illegally, but everybody knows exactly what's going on. It's a prescription for corruption, and the takeaway is be careful what you fix if it's not broken.
Jack, do you think term limits should or could be overturned and have the system overhauled in Michigan, or are the horses out of the corral?
They should absolutely be overturned tomorrow. We've always had a system of term limits. They were called elections. If you got rid of term limits and put in a nonpartisan commission to draw state legislative boundaries, we'd be just fine. And in any event, if people want to elect a moron, they should be allowed to elect a moron and keep the moron there if that's what they want. But the practical thing is, there's a lot of groups, the Koch brothers, for example, some other groups, who like term limits because that keeps the legislators inexperienced, powerless, and stupid, and gives lobbyists a lot of power. But I think it would be an immense civic undertaking if some group, Center for Michigan, say, would make a major effort to repeal or at least modify term limits in Michigan. The mess we're in now is largely a part of that, and Paul Egan's story is the best one I've ever seen at sort of documenting it.
Well, I think that we should leave it at that. That is well said, and it is a tremendously comprehensive story. Paul Egan, Detroit Free Press, Lansing Bureau reporter, and, of course, Jack Lessenberry, Michigan Radio political analyst. Thanks to both of you for joining us today on Stateside.
Thanks so much.